Jotunheim, the heart of the network of the gods. Miles of bone, sinew, and synapse. It's time to tear it all down. Ragnarok is coming, and it's you.
Let's do it.
So, who's acting first? What's up? We've got the Hand of Tyr in front of us. We have these details. The Hand of Tyr has 8 boxes, right? So effectively, we need 8 successes to take this beast, this being down. So who's going to do what?
Not I. Not exactly courageous.
I am happy to have Grokund wade into the fray.
I love that. I love that. I think I know what I want Sigrun to do, but I think that's a good first beat.
Great. Mm-hmm. So I revised the Living Network move last time we talked about it for Aki for future reference. When the bones are out, there is no upgrade one level that doesn't exist. That's a thing from the old stuff. Instead, your dice double. So basically, Grokund's details don't have any ratings next to them. They just are in parallel to the ratings that Magnus has, right? So the first detail is 20 dice. The second detail is 14 dice. The third detail is 10 dice.
Gotcha.
And I did the wonderful thing of naming all of Grokund's details after late 90s, early 2000s wrestling entrance songs. And I'm just going to lash out with the first detail, No Chance, That's What You've Got, with the intent to just smash this thing into oblivion. What do you all think the difficulty for that should be?
Ooh, we're just starting off. So it's at max health right now.
It's got to be high. It's got to be real high.
I mean, yeah, I feel like just trying to beat this thing down is probably the most difficult possible way to take it down.
Right?
You just want to pin it to 10 and let's see what
you
happens.
You know what? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, great.
Our success rate isn't great. I worry for you.
Yeah, we're not rolling awesome tonight.
Mm-mm.
No, we're not. So on 20 D6s, I got 1, 2, 3, 4. 4 hits.
Wow.
Which is not going to do it.
Nope.
That's not going to work at all. So I'm going to spend a control point and use Magnus's detail, just try and stop me. And I'm going to reroll those misses. So that is 16d6. And like, I see the big sort of conglomerate fist coming down on top of this thing. And almost casually, the Hand of Tyr just like raises its own fist. And they don't hit each other. There's like this collision of energies as like the virtual world and the living world are interacting at the same time. And they're like pushing toward each other. And Grokund is attempting to break down the defenses of the Hand of Tyr.
That's much better.
That's much better. So that'll be 4 successes. So 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 total successes. And 1, 2, 3, 4 of those are sixes. So we're at 11, 12. 12 total successes. So didn't double. That's one box.
Hey, that's something.
We'll take it.
It feels right though. Like this is a formidable enemy.
Yeah, this is the boss, right?
For real.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is 100% a boss fight. So the giant's hand comes down and there's like this sort of red energy coming off of the Hand of Tyr, and there's this, I think Grokund is pulling in like the ambient light from the technology of the area, right? So it's this that nice bluish neon light, and there's that point of like the red and light and the blue light are sort of meeting in the middle, and it's got this almost ultraviolet tinge to it. And suddenly there's a surge of blue light and the red is knocked back. But all that happens is that the Hand of Tyr takes one step back and catches its footing and firms up again.
Oof.
Next.
I got something if y'all don't, but go ahead. Because Nidhogg is veritably the coward. Like, they're slippery.
I want to sort of start doing something which is not in direct confrontation, but maybe sort of like a background action that is occurring while this is happening. I don't really see Siv being the person at the moment to directly engage with the Hand of Tyr, as it were.
Aw, why not?
You know, could be anything, but at least I can lend a hand.
Yay!
I think that what Siv is doing at the moment is sort of, I think from the get-go, as soon as Grokund like rushes in to grapple with this thing directly, Siv starts looking around the room and just sort of trying to take things in, and I think staggers over to the closest part of the wall as quickly as possible and starts just inscribing runes on the walls of this of this room, this chamber, as it were. And I don't think that this is something which is going to have any immediate effect. It's a large room and it's a pretty formidable thing. What I'm trying to do essentially is just sort of start to set up atmospheric like pings essentially. Mm-hmm. And so Siv is going around and just beginning to carve in this rune for noise and confusion into the wall in as many places as possible with my little laser pointer. And what I'm trying to do is just set up sort of like a ring, I guess, like a perimeter, where I have these confusion runes. So this is the rune Belka, which is noise, confusion, opaque.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm doing right now. I'm going around the wall, like sort of sidling along the edges, making my way as surreptitiously as I can and just marking these in, you know, close to information panels or wiring where I can see it. But for the most part, just setting up a perimeter of these things. And, you know, from my vantage point where I have my laser pointer, I can get places that I'm not immediately in. So I don't have to, like, you know, walk around the entire distance of this room. Mm-hmm. But I don't know what you might do for that. If that's like a challenge rating you want me to roll, or if that's like an ongoing thing you want me to roll every round or what have you. We haven't really done something like this yet.
Sure. I was thinking that it was going to be a single roll and the difficulty would be set by how quickly you want it to be done. Right. So I was going to ask how many other actions you want to take place before it's set up. And the fewer actions it is, the higher the difficulty is going to be. Right. So if you wanted to say, have this accomplished at the end of when Sigrun or Nidhogg goes, then that's going to be like an 8. If you want to wait 2 turns, it's going to be a 6. If you want to wait 3 actions, it's going to be a 4.
Sure.
Because every time something happens in a fight of this scale, you're risking exposure.
Yeah, totally. I'm seeing this as like a 3 or 4 actions thing. I mean, this is like, I think, a prolonged activity. What I'm trying to do is not an immediate payoff thing. It's kind of like, I think I have one chance to do something useful in this fight, and this is what I can do. So,
okay. Then I think that also speaks to what the efficacy of it is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say 3 actions, if that seems. So 1 was going to be 8, 2 was going to be 6, 3 was going to be 4. And what that will do is for every action of someone else that you're taking to do this, if it's successful, that's going to mark off 3 boxes, right?
Okay.
Because you're essentially cutting off internet communication, right? And mm-hmm. that's apparently a big component of how the Hand of Tyr functions. So this can be a big hit, but if the hand notices you doing it, it's going to be bad news if it comes your direction.
Yeah.
So cool. Then what detail are you going to use?
I think I'm going to use my, well.
Oh,
I think it's either going to be...
Sorry.
Yeah, it's either going to be no idle hands, just play things or not over till it's over. But, you know, the hands thing is a sensitive topic at the moment.
Yeah, I should just say no idle hands.
No idle hands. I mean, not at this point.
At all.
I've got one hand and it's working pretty hard.
Yeah.
Let me see. I wasn't even looking to see if this is worth using a move.
Oh, yeah.
Well, my at-need ability, I lost.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason earlier. I don't remember what happened, but it was probably bad. I mean, my session ability is kind of what I'm doing anyway.
That feels appropriate.
Okay.
Yeah, so the level of effect is equal to the number of successes you roll in your action. Okay, so we'll handle it that way since, you know, that's how it's written into this power.
Okay.
So the difficulty is going to be 2. It's going to take 3 turns to set up, but the number of successes that you get is how many successes you get, right? That's how many boxes are going to be ticked off.
Okay.
Because this is, I mean, you get to do this once a session. This is a big shot. But what you're doing is obvious. Like, in this environment of blue neon light and dust and smoke, your laser pointer is visible arcing across the room. So it's going to draw attention, most likely. I think narratively and mechanically, that all feels tense and appropriate enough for this entire thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cool. Let's have a roll. You only really need 2 successes, but...
Okay, so I'm still rolling with a detail, like with always.
Yeah.
Even though it's still a move thing. Mm-hmm. All right, cool. Well, I mean, I think taking all that into consideration, what I do is I look at Sigrun and I say, cover me. And then I just pull out my laser pointer and I start going to work. So I'll do my no idle hands. And then I also am using my laser pointer for this. So that's a +1, right?
Yeah.
So 11, d6. Were any of those successes?
3 of them.
3 of them. There we go. Okay.
So you got the thing. And honestly, oddly, it worked out the way that I had said originally, that if you stick with this, it'll be 3 boxes. because of the use of the power.
Yeah, I'll take it.
Okay.
Nice. I do need to roll my glitch dice too, though, right?
Yes, you do.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's five of them, baby.
Five glitch dice. Three successes on the glitch dice means a standard complication to Yin self.
Okay, I mean...
This poor character.
What's a standard complication to, like...
So I have that written down. A standard complication, so for a mechanical complication, for example, mm-hmm. until the end of the scene, your at-need ability is unavailable. And okay. This one is a narrative complication. A trusted contact doesn't show to the next meeting, right? So think of things that are equivalent. Probably need to have a better example than that. But so your at-need ability is being able to imbue runes into anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically, and I have a note on my thing there that I need to add a bonus die to that ability because it should give you something for the rune.
Mm-hmm.
I think for the rest of this encounter, you cannot casually use runes the way that you're used to. And it makes sense. Mm-hmm. All of your resources are tapped for that. You are literally, you're literally missing a hand. Like,
I'm missing a hand. I have like active runes in two places of my body right now holding me together. Like, yeah, this is.
Yeah, that feels right.
Essentially, like I succeed in doing this or I die and both may happen. Mm. So that's where Civ is at.
That feels appropriate. And I think that given your narrative situation, even a standard complication, what we're doing is we're putting Civ in literal danger of death. Like that's, I think, mm-hmm. where we're at with this. That feels appropriate. Cool.
I have an action. Now, so when you roll glitch dice, they go away or do I still have the glitch dice on me?
They go away.
Cool. So I'm back to zero glitch dice and my action that I'm taking, I know the action that I'm taking. It's also kind of a background action. I think like there's a moment where Civ and Sigrun kind of like lock eyes and both like slide around and Sigrun kind of like slingshots around one of these, is it a stalactite or a stalagmite is the one that goes up from the ground?
I don't know.
Stalagmite goes up.
So I slingshot around one of these stalagmites and I'm kind of like sitting and I'm kind of like jamming some of the wires and the lights on them. And I'm just kind of like poking at them and I'm grabbing little bits and bobbles. What I am going to do is I am turning this room into a bomb. I am rigging all of these stalactites and stalagmites to explode around the hand of Tyr. I make things that go boom, and I'm making this room into a thing that goes boom.
Cool. So that is, it's quite along the lines of what Alex was doing, and I like it a lot. So you think you're using breakdown, or are you?
I think so. I'm using the wiring already in the stalagmites and using the things already kind of in the room. So I think this is breakdown in terms of like how I'm going to accomplish this.
Sure. Okay. So I think in difference to what Civ is doing, yours is going to be active actions on each of your turns because you have a set of distinct concrete steps, right? Because you have to get the parts, you have to make the explosive, and you have to place the explosive.
Yeah.
Whereas Civ can like laser point around for whatever. So stripping this room for parts, I'm going to say it's a five just because these are very like clean, precise, locked down things. But you get three extra dice in your pool for this action. So like... there's going to be some offset.
And I'm using my detail. I make things that go boom. So I'm at 13 dice and I need five. I can accomplish this. Oh, that is many, many successes. That is a good feeling.
Okay. Tell me of your many successes.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 successes.
Nice. Not quite doubled up, but still.
But enough to kind of pull out some wires. And what I'm envisioning here is like I'm really focused on like one stalagmite that's going to kind of feed into the rest, right? Like I'm the component mm-hmm. parts that I've pulled out here is like I kind of run my hand along one of these, like you described them kind of having like wire lights on them and kind of like these like the you could see kind of wiring. I imagine I'm running my hand along one of these like seams and I just find a spot and like rip it open. I'm used to ripping open pieces of technology and like I've got kind of like a mess of wires and circuit boards and things in front of me in this stalagmite that I can kind of like start messing with to light this thing up.
Nice.
I love that.
And that's one action of the three for Civ's Siv's thing. Nidhogg, what you got?
All right. So, like, Nidhogg has been, like, cowering behind. You know, they kind of took one step into the room and they're just not feeling it. But upon seeing Sigrun kind of running up and, like, Siv using the Stileg mites as cover, it gives her a bit of an idea. So, while crouched down, I want him to run up to a couple of the Stileg mites and turn off their lights to create some shadow and camouflage so that they can launch their poisonous nanobots. And these aren't just, like, your regular nanobots, whatever your perception of a regular nanobot is. These are nanobots that once attached to their prey, and their prey has to be something of an inorganic material, you know, like the Hand of Tyr. And their sole purpose is to cut off power to the main core at a certain junction. So what Nidhogg is trying to do is turn off the power to the legs to prevent it from chasing us when this room explodes.
Nice. I dig it. Okay.
That's sick as hell.
It is sick. I absolutely love this. I think difficulties with this, with the Hand of Tyr, are not going to be small ones, like, in general, especially because there's only one box marked. Actually, I think that might be a good way to sort of gauge that, is that in general, difficulties for the Hand of Tyr are, like, right around an 8. 8 boxes. I like parity like that when I design things. We've marked one box off. Let's say it's going to be a 7, right? Because you're coming at it in an effective way. What the Bone Bonded did was not necessarily effective, so the difficulty was amped up because, you know, it was meeting strength for strength.
Yeah.
So go ahead and roll versus a difficulty of 7.
Okay.
Keeping in mind that you are firing at a mech that is currently, well, there's something between you and it, and that's another thing made of inorganic material.
So there's a very obvious problem.
And it's Metal Sonic.
Metal Sonic is really susceptible to poison nanobots, guys. I don't know what to tell you.
That came up in the fishing mini games, the Big the Cat fishing games. They're a really, really big plot point.
Oh my goodness.
If you skipped the Big the Cat fishing mini games, you were missing out on vital lore.
Mm-hmm. It's always essential.
You have to read the wiki.
So remind me, if I'm using one of my at-need abilities, what does that add?
Well, it depends on the at-need ability. So you are a snack.
A snack. Little baby snack.
And the at-need ability is lights out. Okay. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you basically just get to say what happens. There's no die roll associated with this, but this would not be the action of firing the nanobots.
Gotcha. That's okay then.
Yeah, so this is just you taking an action and changing the lighting in the space to be shadowy and advantageous to yourself.
Fabulous. So that is absolutely what she is doing. You know, maybe like kicking the stalagmites a little bit, like seeing that, like, Sigrun, why are you so good at pulling them apart? And then, like, they'll smack it a little bit until the lights flicker off and kind of do that to create a bit of a pathway to the to the Hand of Tyr.
Cool. Yeah, so give me a little cinematic description of that. Like, what does it look like, and what does the sort of pathway that you have created look like?
It is absolutely very zigzaggy. They don't want to take anything too clear, because especially if this fight starts to travel around the room, off, like, are they fighting on the pedestal? That's not the word. On the altar?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
They're on the stairs and on the dais and.
Awesome.
Yeah, on the dais.
Dais. So that does create some more space. And then, like, literally the team, like Siv and Sigrun, they are doing the rounds in this room. So Nidhogg is kind of following a similar path, but with a very different goal, and crouched down behind all of these metal looming stalagmites with their neon blue glow that is wrapped around them, kind of imbued with those runes. And they're maybe scratching off the runes to kind of shatter a little bit of that technology just to get close enough to shoot those little nanobots in an effective way and hopefully not hurt our dear friend Grokund.
Nice.
Because that's mattered so much to you in the past.
It only matters when I want to talk about it.
So I've changed the detail on the Chamber of the Hand to neon tracery some places.
Yes. Awesome.
Now, a quick procedural question for you as co-GMs of this situation. As written, the opposition does not get, like, an active action, right? It's sort of like Apocalypse World, where everything is responsive. the Hand of Tyr acting would be like a result of glitch dice going badly or things like that. We're in a position where, given that Grokund, that I have two more control points and Grokund's dice are doubled, the odds of Grokund, for example, taking glitch dice are slim to none, at least for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you think that settles out? Like, do we need to have an opposition action? Do I need to assign dice detail, like dice ratings, to the details that the Hand of Tyr has, so the Hand of Tyr is actively rolling?
What if at the end of a round, we each, like, I mean, the thing that we've been doing for enemies has been kind of cool in just like, we decide details or we decide consequences or like we decide outcomes for each other.
Mm-hmm.
What if in a round like this, in a boss fight type thing, like we all go through our individual actions and then each of us assigns a detail to the response action?
I am here for it. I love it. I think that is fantastic. So the lights sort of fade out. The room is shadowy and more flickery.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start with Jeff. What does the Hand of Tyr do?
The Hand of Tyr is at this moment unconcerned with I think three, like Grokund is the core of its attention, right? Like Grokund is the thing that rushed it immediately. Like we like none of the three of us have done a thing to antagonize it yet. And I think that, you know, if there's somebody punching you in the face and
its vision is based on movement.
Right.
Its vision is based on punching.
Its vision is based on punching. I think, like, if there's somebody punching you in the face and there's three people in the background doing something maybe shifty, like, your focus is going to be on the person punching you in the face. So I think it is full on trying to eliminate Grokund in the most direct and violent way possible.
Okay.
Can I also just, like, add something to that? I think that in terms of motivation, like, I think that this thing, since this thing is itself a, like, bastardization of the bone bonded, this thing rests as, like again, a co-opting of an inherently revolutionary tool bent against us. Like, it's built on the premise that the bone bonded is the coolest fucking thing we could possibly have, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, it would be impossible for whoever's piloting this thing to conceive of a threat in the room bigger than the bone bonded in front of it, is the point. Like, I think the point is, to whoever's operating this thing, which is now inextricable from the Hand of Tyr itself, like, to even conceive of the rest of us as a threat would mean a level of humility it's not capable of. This is the coolest thing in the room. The closest thing to it is the bone bonded. So the bone bonded is the only thing that matters.
I like it.
Okay. So I'm definitely here for that. However, this room itself, like this space was, you know, not only a place of, God, I want to say sacrifice. What's the word? A holy place.
Mm-hmm.
As you would say, I believe that it would have some pretty solid defense systems. So I think those stalactites are starting to come crashing down, and they create little, like, pockets of electricity, creating little danger zones in the ground.
Okay, I like it. I think that the net result of all of this, and I'm going to have to, I need to make a note, boss action round, just like we assign difficulties, boss actions just give glitch dice.
Yeah, that's sick. I like that. That's kind of what I was thinking, was like, we just give somebody glitch dice.
Yeah, because glitch dice aren't harm. They're potential for harm. They always have been. So mm-hmm. when there's a threat action, when there's a boss action, a layer action, like you just described, B, right, glitch dice are just handed out narratively appropriately, just like we decide difficulties for things, because it can go the same way. So I think that with the fight being focused on Grokund, I think that Grokund, we'll save that for last. I'm going to let that percolate a little bit in terms of how many glitch dice are coming at it and what the hand's actions look like. But I think that that sort of layer action of the stalactites falling and creating pockets of electricity, I think there are 1, 2, and 3 glitch dice to hand out, right? So one of you is going to get 1 die, one of you is going to get 2 dice, one of you is going to get 3 dice. And in my mind, it makes the most sense to give 1 die to Siv, because Siv is largely staying in one spot, so there's maybe 1 thing that falls nearby. There's 2 dice to give to Sigrun, because Sigrun has collected components and is now cobbling something together and has, like, things that might have electricity arc toward them. And there's 3 dice for Nidhogg, because Nidhogg is actively moving around the room looking to find an angle to poison the Hand of Tyr.
Cool, cool, cool.
I love it.
Great. So you each have 1, 2, and 3 glitch dice respectively. And while this is happening, I think that I think the Hand of Tyr squares up against Grokken, and there's an exchange of punches, and it's actually like fists hitting each other, like they're both telegraphing each other's movements so precisely. But then a panel opens up on the shin of the Hand of Tyr, and another hand shoots out and grabs a hold of the leg of the bone bonded, and red, the red energy that represents an internet connection, right? That represents sort of a network level action, courses all the way up and through, like red force lightning, right? Like just coruscates across this cobbled together body of Grokken the Fell. And I think Grokken takes 6 glitch dice.
Dang.
Now, I don't mean to be pedantic.
Please.
I think this is all whips, and I love it, and I think it's very good. However, in the setup for this, you described fists hitting fists, and I do need to remind you that the Hand of Tyr has drill hands.
That was a topic of discussion.
Very important detail. Thank you.
That is one of the details.
Okay, cool. So it's not fists hitting fists. It's Grokken kind of sort of wailing at it, and the Hand of Tyr is using its fists, but because they're points, and when we see drill hands, right, we think of them as just pyramids, right? So it slicks off, right, and diverts Grokken's blows away, taking chunks of stone out of there. I appreciate that, Alex, very much, because the drill hands are a very important part of all of this.
Mm-hmm.
I still say a regular ass hand shoots
out
of the
leg. Yes, I'm still here for that.
No, all of that is fine. That's all great. Just the flavor text of the drill hands is vital to me.
Very good. So I am noting down the glitch dice for Grokken, which is 6. Cool. So unless anyone has any objections, I don't see any reason to not stick with the same order we were just operating.
That works.
Yeah, which means that Grokken is going to attempt to do something to try and sort of circumvent the force on force, right? Because Grokken's not foolish about this. They are arrogant, and he is intense and has every confidence in his abilities. However, obviously just trying to punch down this thing is not going to be the way to go. So I'm going to use Break the Walls Down, the second detail, and Grokken is going to attempt to just sort of start grabbing onto the armor itself and like tearing rents and holes in it and like disabling bits of weapon and things like that. And this is going to be a regular 7 difficulty if that jibes with everybody else, because it is a reasonable tactic.
Yeah.
Yep.
So that is going to be 14 dice for a 7 difficulty, and then I'll roll the 6 glitch dice post. So, by the way, I am fucking in love with how this is working. This is making me very, very happy.
This is cool. This has got me jazzed up.
Yes.
So 1, 2, 3, 4 successes.
Oof.
So I think this is a moment where we can introduce, we haven't really done partial successes yet, right? There's success at a cost in this game.
Yeah, I'm a big fan, but let's do it.
So I think that the way that I had envisioned this, so we're looking at 5 successes. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And I needed 7, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to happen, but Grokken's going to get an additional 2 glitch dice just straight up on top of that are going to get rolled right now. They're not going to float to the next action. They're just going to stack on top of what's happening. So depending on how those glitch dice go, we will narrate what happens. So that would be 8d6 glitch dice.
That's so many.
Oh,
I'm
wait.
I'm so nervous for you.
Oh, wait. No. Hang on. No. I forgot a bone bonded rule. This is great. This is really good for us in this explicit moment. This is really, really, really bad for Magnus Grimm.
Oh, no, Magnus.
When you have the bones out, you don't actively take glitch dice.
Oh no. Then what happens?
When the scene ends, you owe your giant a favor equal in scope to the number of glitch dice that you would have taken. Every 3 glitch dice represents a level of indebtedness that you have to your giant, and you must repay this favor before you can use the ability again.
Oof.
So bone bonded do not like, there's not bone bonded size blowback for glitch dice. Glitch dice just sort of don't actively happen. They just keep totaling up because the bone bonded is a virtual construct. It's a virtual being with a fake body made of stuff that it's accreted around itself. What's a glitch die going to do to it?
I love it.
After the fact, Magnus is going to be owing Grokken some big favors on top of 3.5 days of...
We're not going to see Magnus for like a week, 2 weeks.
I'm ready to accept that some of us may never see Magnus again.
But... That's very true.
I have a thing I want to throw in because it's cool.
Please.
So I'd love to propose, unless you have anything else you want to throw in for your action, I'd love to, as I'm taking my action, maybe throw something over to...
Well, so there's this success at a cost.
Right, right. I forgot about your glitch dice, yes.
Yeah, so I get the regular thing, right? I have a regular success on that because I hit what I need to hit with the success at a cost. So another box gets marked off, and I think that it looks mostly cosmetic, right? Because this thing is shiny. I mean, this thing looks like a paladin. Right, it's some like fucked up space marine looking asshole. This is some Warhammer 40K devotee of the Emperor bullshit that's going on in front of us, and Grokken is just like with fingers and that are made of like rebar, right? Are just like scraping across the shiny pristine metal and like pulling off a wolf head here and damaging. You know, a little widget there. And all of these actions are disabling little tiny weapons things that can happen. You know, like, oh, there's sleep darts in this chamber and blah, 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 whatever. But it looks just like the Hand of Tear is just sort of getting scuffed up. So that's the result of the action. Jeff, what do you got?
I have a complication that I want to throw in. And I can do it if you roll some complications or if any of us roll a complication, or I can just put it on the table and we can throw it in. But there's a beat to me that is very good about this. Is going back, there's a beat to me that is very good about, like, Grokken in particular. If all of your aspects are violence and destruction and 90s wrestling themes,
mm-hmm.
and the three of us in particular are along for this ride, I feel like there's absolutely a beat of, there's absolutely some Order 66 happening here in the background around, like, Grokken is going to amass some things, and it's going to be very bad for a lot of people if Grokken just walks out there and starts smashing things up. So the other three of us, probably we get a flashback to Roy, like, briefing us on the mission of, like, if Grokken is in a position to take control and walks out of here, like, that's not a thing that can happen safely. Like, it's either work out a deal with Grokken, or Grokken doesn't walk out of here.
Oh, dang.
Grokken walking out of here is not an acceptable consequence of this assignment, right? Like, it is something that, like, it is just that added complication of, like, this incredibly important part of this mission is too dangerous to be allowed to roam free afterwards. And it's kind of on the back of all three of our minds of, like, whatever deal Magnus and Grokken have is fine. Our deal is different.
And I think that makes sense to me, because if part of the whole reason why we established that our other team of people have to be the ones to be the heroes here is, like, if Grokken wins this fight and takes out the entire Panopticon in the process, then there's nothing left for our hero story to rest on the back of.
Yes. It's very, very multi-layered, because I think that for Aki, Groa does not have the same, like, path of vengeance kind of vibe that Grokken has. And even if Grokken is confined to Magnus's body, Grokken is going to be cutting a swath of terror across Jotunheim and beyond. So there's the optics, which I love, Alex, that you called that out. And then there's also the practical logistics of this thing is going to be nigh unstoppable.
We kill it now, or we will have to kill it later.
Oof. Yeah, it's really fascinating to me, though, that just that this ends up being an added layer of, you know, intrigue to the idea that, like, it's vitally important to us that we tell a cool story about a bone-bonded hero, but it's got to be the right bone-bonded hero.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And you're not it, which is, like, interesting to me.
Ugh. It is. And it's as close to, like, faction infighting that I want to get in this game in general. But like, it edges right up to that line. Like, that's really good and really intriguing. And I like it, especially because, mechanically speaking, Grokken's not going to suffer much from this fight. That's just not the nature of bone bonded are relatively nigh unstoppable forces.
This also kind of retcons an interesting thing into what actually I was having Civ do, which is that, and, you know, maybe we cut this or present this differently, but the reason why Civ was doing this is because, like, of the connection to recognizing that this is essentially mechanical bone bonded is presenting occasional, like, effectively, this, like, runic perimeter of interrupting signals was based on the thought that I could essentially shut down the connection between the person operating the mech and the mech itself, and therefore render it useless. Mm-hmm. But if that's a thing that also would work on Grokund, then we have a failsafe that Civ might very well, like, die setting up.
We're definitely not going to edit that to be different because, like, the story is not above the process, right? This podcast is about the process, and that was fucking brilliant.
Yeah, that's cool.
That is exactly the kind of story justification that I want to see happen in a game like this, that I'm so happy about all of this. That's a fantastic complication, Jeff. Alex, thank you for adding on to that and fleshing that out so much more. This is dynamite. So what do you got there, Sigrun?
So what I'm doing is I am leveraging the fact that the stalactites are coming down, because I think I know you said that this was a three action thing, but I might propose that this is a two action thing, because I think the second half of it is I'm not so much building a bomb as I think at this point, like, the wires are out, and what I'm doing is intentionally shoddily, like, tying them back together, right? Like, connecting positives to positives and, like, making it kind of like priming the battery so that stalactites are going to start coming down onto stalagmites, so that, like, when a thing hit, and just basically, like, rigging this place up so that it goes up in smoke. You know what I mean? Like, using the fact that they're going to crash down this thing to be like, when it crashes down near this thing is going to go up. I can still use that I keep that as three actions, but I think that's the plan, and I think I'm still making a thing go boom here, but I'm no longer, like, scavenging for parts. I think I'm just tying wires together and, like, rigging up these stalagmites to be ready to explode.
That sounds fantastic to me. Given the, like, the force of the fight that's happening in the middle and the chaos of the stalactites and the electricity pools that are around, you've already got two glitch dice. I'm feeling a seven. How's everyone else feel about that?
Yeah.
That feels good.
Seven feels good to me.
Okay.
That is two successes.
All right.
I you know what? I'm taking a partial success. I'm going to take those five glitch dice immediately.
Okay. All right. So go ahead and roll your seven glitch dice.
Let's do it. I'm rolling seven glitch dice. Let's live.
Or not.
Right.
That is two successes on the glitch dice. So that is a minor complication on someone else.
That's nothing.
Yep. A minor complication to an ally.
Okay, I think the minor complication I want to throw in is a narrative complication. I've been thinking that I have to... The complication that I just introduced, this is the perfect moment to put that minor complication, the narrative complication, onto Nidhogg, which is, you have the kill shot. It is your... Ah! You are the sniper. You are the kill shot of the three of us. That kill shot is on your shoulder. And, like, the narrative complication, the way that I put it on you is, like... I know where you are because, like, I'm watching, and I just literally, like, lock eyes with you, and there's just this charged moment of, like, it's go time. Like, we have our main objective. We now have our secondary objective.
You got an eye roll and a nod.
Because I think this is probably the first time that you've seen, maybe that you've seen actually been around a bone bonded in action.
Most likely.
And you're seeing just how indestructible they are, right? Mm-hmm. You're seeing that they're, that Grokund is just shrugging off these blows, and you don't know where the reckoning is going to come, but it's Roy's words are echoing in your head. Whew. Cool. So Civ, you are still doing your thing?
Yeah, I'm still doing my thing. And I know that we already sort of established that I was using my session ability on that. And so if I'm interpreting correctly, that rolling is already done, right? Mm-hmm.
That rolling is already done.
But what I would love to do is go ahead and, like, codify this complication that we've established of trying to make this a sort of fail safe for our bone bonded as well. So I would love to go ahead and roll something against this. And I don't know what the difficulty level of this roll is, because I'm really just trying to, I guess, surreptitiously, like, encode an additional layer of security into my rune magic or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
So just, like, add an effect onto the spell I'm already doing, I guess.
Well, so, and that makes sense, right? Because since we added boss/layer action as a thing, that is an action that happened. So there have been three actions since you did your thing.
Right.
So your work now is done. Like, if you can imagine working as a team of operatives with Magnus, and Magnus knows what your game plan is, and then suddenly you flip the script and you lock this place down and essentially cut it off from the network.
Yeah.
Then that's the word I've been trying to remember the whole time is network, by the way. That's network. Fantastic.
Yes.
My brain provides when it wants.
Hey, it caught up.
It did. So, oh, your second detail works perfectly for this. Only my secrets stay secret?
Yeah.
Cool. So what I think this will do, we're already, your action's going to go off. I'm going to mark three more boxes off of the Hand of Tyr because you have definitely affected it. Being cut off from, because this is information, the ability to analyze its opponent, right? There's so much that it was getting from the network. For Grokund as well, how to represent this? The best way I think to represent this would be, okay, here we go. So depending on what difficulty you want to do, we know this is a sort of a three success kind of thing that you've done.
Uh-huh.
Let's use that as a base difficulty and look at the ratings that would normally be on Magnus's details. This is, I'm running a bit of an end around to do this, but
okay.
If you want Grokund to not be able to use their top detail, their 20-point detail, then you need 7 successes, mm-hmm. because that's your 3 marks plus 7 to get to 10, which is the rating of Magnus's, right? Does that sort of make sense?
Sure.
I'm just looking at the numbers in front of me and going, okay, well, you've done a thing worth 3. A 10-point detail would be difficulty 10, but it's 7 because you've done 3. If you wanted to get rid of the second detail, then it's going to be 4. And if you want to get rid of the third detail, it's only going to be 2. But basically, the backlash from the cutoff is going to be so great mm-hmm. that it's going to feed back through Magnus and hit Grokund such that it won't be able to use one of its 3 details for the remainder of the conflict. And that includes to resist the end point that you 3 have.
Right.
Sorry, that was convoluted, but I think I got there.
That's okay. As long as you know what the math is, because I'm thinking narratively and I'm thinking like, yeah, I mean, I think this is the timing of this all works out so narratively beautifully. I think that, you know, I'm working on this and Siv is like carving that last rune and sweat is just dripping down her face. Like the most pain that a person has ever been in right now is the amount of agony that is carved on Siv's face. And I think that there is also at the same time a look of steely resolution of, you know, this is my last mission. This is what I'm doing. This is what I came here to do. And I think maybe even Siv of all people knew this was endgame even before anyone else did. The realization that, you know, this thing that I've been carrying around, this plan I've been counting on, this thing I knew I was doing once I got to the chamber of the Hand of Tyr was always going to be a thing I was doing to Grokund as well. And when I notice the two of them sort of realizing that this moment is approaching, I realize I don't have any more time to lose. Like, it's now or never. Because if that kill, like, it's not that I don't trust Nidhogg's kill shot. I am well aware of the power of Nidhogg's kill shots, having been on the receiving end of several of them. But I think that in order for that kill shot to be a kill shot, it's not going to be enough on its own. So I am going to do my best to open that gap as wide as I can and make sure that if any of us walk out of here, it's not him.
Difficulty is 7 then, because I think you're going to take out the top detail.
Yeah, that's what I'm aiming for.
Ooh.
All right, so difficulty 7. And yeah, I mean, I think I'm rolling with only my secrets stay secret. And I can use my laser pointer on this, right?
Of course, you're putting a little flourish at the end there.
All right, of course, naturally. Let's see, so 8. Oogs. What did I get?
1.
1.
1. And a glitch dice, so let's see how that goes.
Oh my heck.
Yeah, right? How bad is it?
Nothing.
Okay. That's not too bad. All right, so remind me, what are my options here?
You can fail. You don't get anything for failure, you just fail. You can take success at a cost, in which case you will get glitch dice equal to the difference of what you are trying to accomplish,
mm-hmm.
which would be 6 glitch dice. Because you got the 1 success. Or you can spend a control point and reroll those misses.
Yeah, I'm going to take success at a cost. I think that's narratively most satisfying under these circumstances. So do you want me to go ahead and roll this glitch dice now?
No, the glitch dice, new glitch dice always wait until the next action. If we feel that, I mean, and this is just sort of maybe for us, I don't know if it'll get codified into the rules, but if you feel like the weight of glitch dice is too much for you upon exit, if you're like, no, I've got too many glitch dice, I'm just going to tap out, then that's fine. And narratively, your character will shuffle off this mortal coil and will give them an appropriate send-off.
Yeah.
But what does it look like to take that many glitch dice, right? You're sacrificing a lot of yourself to sort of get to that place. Yeah. you're still alive, I think. I don't think there's anything that could happen right now aside from a stalactite mysteriously falling on your head that would kill you for this action, right, narratively. But it costs a lot.
Well, here's what I do think. I think that in order to make this happen, the cost ultimately is that there is a moment before it completely succeeds wherein Grokund is aware of what I'm doing. And so I don't know what that looks like. I don't know what the consequence of that is, but I think that in order for me to pull this off, whether it's that I have to, you know, step out of where I have been doing this to get that final thing, or I think what it probably is that, you know, I'm trying to inscribe my last rune to sort of finish this binding perimeter, and I realize that because of the position of where things are, the last one that I have to place is going to have to be, like, on Grokund in order to make this efficient enough to succeed at doing what I need it to do. And so I have to step out and I have to carve this final rune, like, onto the sort of assembled body of the Bone Bonded. So, you know, there's a moment where everything is sort of compiling itself and locking into place and this rune is powering up, wherein there is a split second in which I am completely at the whims of whatever that Bone Bonded decides I, you know, need to suffer for this act of hubris.
Yeah, so you aim the laser pointer and you carve the rune of Belko onto, like, a piece of... it's actually a piece of, on this side of the doors, it's still that smooth, like, really sort of wet looking, like, dark marble almost. And that's, like, there's a piece right in Grokund's back that you just carve Belko into. And it's glowing. Yeah. Like, the, was your laser pointer, like, what color was it?
Oh, I mean, I think it changes depending on what runes I'm carving.
Cool. It's green this time, because that's not a color we have in this room yet, right? We've got red and blue and white. Mm-hmm. So it glows this like virulent green. And because Grokund's body is made up of this amalgamation, there's only an approximation of a face for the giant. And the head kind of shudders when the rune locks and morphs. And the head, the facial shape, comes out of the back of the head and looks directly at you.
Oof.
And I think that to represent the glitch dice, right? Because it wasn't a matter of effort of the magic. Right. It's the situation you're in.
Right.
I think Grokund, like, wheels back an arm and in a fit of poetic justice, an entire stone hand comes flying at you. And this is a moment I'm going to leave with you as a player, Alex, because we know what Sif's situation is. We know where they are. We know what could happen to her.
Mm-hmm.
The stone hand is coming at you. Do you want the moment now or do you want to delay it?
No, we'll go ahead and take it. I think that we don't actually see cinematically the impact. We see a brief look on Siv's face outlined in this sort of glowing green light that's reflected off of the final rune of the perimeter. And we see this brief moment where her eyes close just before impact, and we see her laser pointer clatter to the floor. And then it cuts away, I think, to the other team members. So if there is a reaction, there's a reaction, but that's the last, I think, shot that we get.
It cuts to Nidhogg.
Oh, panic, shook, shock. And they start shouting a little bit at Sigurd, like, you can't make me do, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to be a part of this.
Take the shot.
What if I miss?
Then take another shot. You take shots. You take the shots. You take the shots until it's done.
I'm not getting crushed like Siv. Oh, heck. Is it my turn?
It very much is.
Oh, dear.
Is there at least an opening created?
There's very much an opening. Like, the cutoff of network access is huge for both of these opponents, right? It's a massive loss of telemetry data and so forth for the Hand of Tyr. It is a lack of connection. It would be like losing your ability to think in broad terms, right? It's like losing your ability to imagine if you're a giant, because it's just when you're connected to the network, you are at least passively in touch with other giants. You're passively in touch with an entire biological web of data and information. And suddenly that's gone. And it's like being in a sensory deprivation tank all of a sudden, but there's still a little bit of light. Like, you can see your hand in front of your face, but it's going to take you time to adjust to it. So both of them are reeling right now. They both sort of get knocked back and are like, loose and struggling. The difficulty for the Hand of Tear is only a 3, Nidhogg.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question for you about one of your details.
Oh, yes.
Your second detail is lying is louder than action.
Yeah, it's so backwards, and I can't work it that
well,
way.
Well, no. My question is this. Do you really not want to take the shot, or were you lying to your team?
Ha! God, you're great at this. Oh, gosh, she was absolutely lying. Like, I think he even plays it up even more. Like, I can't, I won't make it out. Like, this is, it's not going to work. And it's just like, it's a whole act. And I don't know how Sigrun's feeling, but if there was ever a time to sweat, it's now.
Oh, I think that Sigrun doubles down and is like, this place is going up. It's you take the shot and risk it, or this room comes down on you. I'm not giving you an order to shoot. I'm giving you a chance to shoot and then run away.
I hate your chances. And they're going to pull out their sniper and take the shot.
Difficulty wise, you need a 3 to take down the Hand of Tear. If you want to take down Grokund as well, then you need a 6, right? 2 successes. Because we're operating on a level playing field here at this point in time, because both of them are reeling. So if you choose a 3 and you get the 6, it's not necessarily going to spill over to Grokund. If you choose a 6, it's both of them or neither of them.
I'm going to take the 3.
Interesting. Okay. You've got 8 dice.
Mm-hmm.
3 from lying is louder than action and 1 from your poisonous tech nanobots.
Perfect.
You've got what? 3 glitch dice that you need to roll after.
Oh, I only got 1 success. Ooh. Do I have, I have 1 control point left. That's not worth it. There's no way I'm going to make it.
Do you want to take success at a cost?
Heck. Oh, yes.
Okay. So you got 1. That's only 2 more glitch dice. So you've got to roll 4 glitch dice right now.
5 total. I had 3 before.
Okay.
Unfortunately, so 5 total. I don't want to be honest or anything.
1, 2.
1, 2.
Which is a minor complication for an ally.
Sigrun, you step in electricity.
Yep.
Not to be passive aggressive.
No, that feels good. That feels real good.
All right. You take the shot. And it looks like it's not going to work, but you hit the Hand of Tear. It is obvious to Sigrun that you only shot at the Hand of Tear, that you did not execute the secondary directive, secondary objective. If Siv is alive, it's obvious to Siv as well, just so that data is out there. What happens when the Hand of Tear falls?
Ooh. Can it? I want it to malfunction on the way down. So it's this chaotic, horrible jumble of parts that are kind of like, there's like one explosion that shoots up towards the ceiling and some of the stalactites fall down. The drills are just kind of spinning pointlessly. There's little hands that are popping out of the shins as it's all of its systems are just failing and all of them are trying to kind of fire off at once as it collapses in a giant crumbling heap to the ground.
And the detail I want to add is the thing that we hear, the thing that is filling all of our ears, is the name of every single person in its data bank, as well as an automated, because it is, and it is rattling them off one by one, and it in between, like, the automated system account of, like, failure. So it's like, it is name, failure, name, fail, like, and it is simultaneously both just, like, rattling off data and also, like, audibly to everyone. It's across all of the speakers. It is everywhere in everyone's ear on the in this facility. A reminder that you, in your own words, in your own voice, have failed.
And the last name is Nidhogg.
That is amazing. So, Sigrun.
I have 1 final action. The final action, this doesn't necessarily even need to be. This I can roll for it if you'd like, or I can just capstone this.
I think you just need to capstone it.
I see the shot go off and I see the thing go down and I'm so proud and what it is the electricity is that my ankle is trapped. Like I'm getting zapped and I'm shivering and shaking and I look at Nidhogg. And Nidhogg, you expect to see, like, anger or disappointment because I've been so harsh. And I'm just like, turn and go. You have 3 seconds.
What? Oh, okay. They go. They don't look back.
and Grokken turns towards Sigrun, the last person in this room, and Sigrun still ankle tied. She like dives at the bone bond. She dives at Grokken, intentionally crossing over the holes of one of these stalactites to like have it come down on her so that it hits one of the stalagmites. And Nidhogg, as you are going, you just hear, probably very muffled because the runes are in place, it is quiet, it is contained. You look and it is as though if you've ever heard like a deep sea charge, that sort of, and you see like smoke come up, but it is like this very contained like cylinder. And you just, and that is all you see is that cylinder of dust, like a building is imploding. And that is the last that you see of this rune and this operation and this successful mission is just a puff of smoke and an underwater boom and nothing.
And it's so quiet in the end.
Oh, that's the worst part. It really is.
And nearer, one of the buttresses for the Panopticon connects to whatever structures it connects to. There's a building, a skyscraper, looming over this neon skyline. And there are three figures with a holographic communicator. And on the holographic communicator, there's a little figure that is Roy. And it just says, okay, now. And we catch a glimpse as the camera fades out of Idis and Ronnie and Aki, who have just gotten their go-ahead to enter the Panopticon into the Heart of Tyr.
Yes!
My friends, let's save the world.
Let's go.
Let's go.
I fucking love you guys.
I'm so sorry to Jupiter. I can't help but scream when I get excited.
That was good in all the ways that I want a session to be good, especially a fucking playtest still. Like,
right? And that happens?
Cinematic.
Yeah, fantastic.
God, B, I love your commitment to choosing like
violence.
Well, like, no, but seriously, like, I've been in spots like that, and it is, like, truly so hard to stay that true to character in a moment where, like, the meta is so obvious.
You know what the right thing is, but I can't, like, I played a snake, you know?
And it rules. No, like, I applaud you for doing that. It's seriously so, it's so hard to do, the cognitive dissonance of making a choice like
that.
It really is. It was such good storytelling in this part.
Thank you so much. You died. You actually died. Yeah. Oh my God. That was beautiful.
We had a character death and it's a character death that was impactful.
Crushed
and
by the hand.
And
yeah.
But the story continues. Like, we're a little short on time, so I'm not going to do our usual roses and thorns. Like, I know, Alex, you have to go pretty quickly. Is there anything you would like to say in reflection of this session? There was a little bit of emotional bleed in this one that I didn't expect. So, so like, how are you feeling about how things are looking session-wise, campaign-wise? I mean,
good. I mean, I had a great time. I mean, again, like, I know we sort of lampshaded this quite a bit in the last session when we were talking about, like, you know, pretty extensively OOC, like, oh, yeah, these are characters who we could totally kill if we needed to, or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, like, I sort of went into this feeling like that was something that was probably going to happen, especially because I had built a character, you know, with traits like it's not over till it's over and only my secrets stay secret. Like, I think that's one of the cool things about this system is you can kind of work backwards to design a character whose fitting end is kind of locked in before you know anything about them, which is kind of neat. And I am really pleasantly surprised by the fact that we were able to get to a scene where Siv's death felt interesting and earned and important in a way that I really didn't think it would. I kind of just thought like, okay, well, this is a character that would be really cool if I had more time. And I don't feel like I really did a lot. And then like, you know, cool to get to the end of it and realize like, here's an opportunity to turn something that I'm kind of coming up with on the fly into what feels in the world like a long, slow burn reveal. So that was neat. Yeah.
So good. I love everybody's moments, everybody's characters, the way we responded to scenes, the way the actions went, the absurd plans. Come on, plans. Like, just nonsense left and right. And it was all moderately successful. Our dice rolls were shit. But we made it work. We really did.
My rose is, we played with it and boy, howdy, success as a cost is juicy. That is
it works.
That is juicy. I was kind of at a point where I was like, ooh, in that boss battle, I was like, I'm not gonna fail and I'm not gonna like try to rework this into a success. I'm just going to take those glitch dice. And like, it just, that's a juicy mechanic. That's got some spice in that meatball.
That's the most satisfying boss fight I've ever been part of. Right? Like, and I
love that.
It's because Metal Sonic was there.
Well, yeah, 100%. Metal Sonic saved the deal.
Having Idris Elba come in as Knuckles was a real choice decision.
Yeah.
That was a great decision, everybody.
I don't remember who suggested that everyone give a detail to the boss, but that was...
Alex! That was so good.
Alex, that was perfection. It works so well with everything else that this system does. And it really makes all of those things feel like they have stakes. And I was worried about them not having stakes. Like, and that, oh.
Well, when I was thinking about it, like in the moment, it just kind of felt like, and this is always my problem with like combat, and it's where I get really lost really easily. And like how I, if I'm ever a player, which happens so infrequently, that like it's so easy to lose track and interest in a boss battle, is that you go through an entire round of actions and then the enemy has one move. So you've kind of got to pick someone, and then everybody else, it's like, what do I do in this round? So mm-hmm. like if you can come up with a way to make everybody one, have to pay attention so they have some stake in deciding what the boss does next, but also in like setting them as narrative complications, because then you're already thinking ahead to like, oh, okay, well, it's like, what's something that I want to be able to react to that might not be a thing the guy's doing, but like a thing that could come up theoretically. Like, I don't know, it just felt more in line with the kind of cinematic approach that we were taking to everything. And I think that the coolest thing to come out of this, because we were doing like a major boss battle in a side campaign with B characters that is like really interesting, is that we ended up using it as an excuse to like set up foils to a boss battle we haven't done yet, which is like really, mm-hmm. really cool. And I thought that the detail of like choosing to essentially take Grokken and turn it into another antagonist was like really cool.
Yeah, Jeff, that was inspired.
And it was so neat because what it did is like it ended up setting up this cool thing where now anything that Groa does in main campaign is going to forever be backlit by the knowledge of like what a bone bonded could yes. be. And like, mm-hmm. I just think it's so interesting to have that built in, because like previous to doing this side story, and I apologize, I know I'm like getting kind of long winded, I'm digressing, but prior to this side story, like what we had were some very cool idealist heroes who, and I know I've been struggling with this, and this is not to say anything about Aki or Rani, because I felt like they're both really cool, really well-developed characters, but I've been struggling with feeling like I had this character that ended up being kind of two-dimensional in this very like, you know, compelling and kind of intense stakes story. And so it was like, well, what's interesting about this character in this world? And now I feel like we've built other characters who have responded to these crises and these times and these circumstances and these political demands in like very drastically different ways. So to come back to hero characters who have these more idealistic aims is genuinely very interesting. It no longer feels like we don't get the world that we're playing in. It feels a lot more like this is a choice and there's a reason why these characters matter, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah, it's gonna make, I agree completely. I could not agree more. I think it's going to make our characters, I think, like, felt a little, and I think, like, in a way that didn't necessarily, I don't want this to sound in a negative way at all, but felt a little rah-rah, I think, at points. And I think this mm-hmm. kind of puts that into such an interesting, like you said, it puts it into such an interesting context of, like, oh, this is what it means to be this sort of rah-rah person. Like, that makes right. it such an interesting choice, and which is why, like, last session I had that really, like, profound moment with Rani where I'm like, I don't think that she is that rah-rah person, and it like fundamentally changed an aspect of his yeah. character, was to be like, oh, I think that, and to process that and really think through what that means is a really interesting choice.
So good. Holy shit, this was fantastic. Thank you all so much. I am in awe of all three of you. I am honored that you're at this table. Fuck.
Iron Edda Reforged is a production of the One Shot Podcast Network in conjunction with the Other Dev Productions. Written and designed by Tracy Barnett. Performed by Alex Flanagan, B. Zelda, and Jeff Stormer. Editing by Jupiter Aquas.
That was it. The feelings that I had, I mean, I'm pretty sure that they're summed up by what Jupiter left in there at the end of the episode, where all I could just say was fuck. But that was the most satisfying large combat, like combat with stakes, right? With emotional weight to it, with intensity, with story resting on it, that was also mechanically satisfying. Like, it just worked so well for me. I really hope that that comes across in the recording for everybody else. I've listened back to it. I still think it's awesome. I'm really pleased by how this all came together. This system is really coalescing into something that I think is extremely special. To that end, I actually have a bit of an announcement here at the end of this episode. So, Iron Edda Reforged, obviously, season one is this thing we're doing with part of the podcast and the release of Jotunheim in PDF form and all that through the Kickstarter that I did. There's going to be the video AP as well, but the collapse of Kickstarter led to some different plans, right? So how I finish out the other seasons is going to be different, and how I'm going to finish all of this out is going to be a little different as well. So I have the game itself put together in a basic form with some missing pieces. I'm going to put that alpha up on Itch today. So you're going to have access to what we've been playing with and where everything is to this point right now. You're going to be able to buy it. So backers, Kickstarter backers, you're going to get it for free. It's just going to be the thing that you have access to. And you're going to be able to buy the alpha, and that will let you springboard as it iterates. You're going to get all the versions up until the final releases. I plan on having the full text done, unedited, but done by the end of January. Then Dominique is going to edit it, and we're going to get this whole thing put out. Hopefully this spring is when I'll be able to get the final layout and all done. So that's extremely exciting. The other thing that's extremely exciting to me is that I'm going to be taking the system that is powering all of this, and I'm going to be putting it into an SRD. So you are going to be able to use the same tech that we are using for Iron Edda Reforged for whatever you want to. I have a licensing model set up that basically says, as long as you credit me and you are not using it for any bigoted or otherwise assholish things, you get to use this system. It's going to be called the Edic Engine, and I'm very excited. I have another project that I'm beginning on right now that is going to be using this same thing, and I have a feeling that all of my projects going forward are going to be using this this system. It's just that good to me. It's extremely flexible, and it's what I want in stories, so why wouldn't I use it? Another thing, I've mentioned before on here that I have a Patreon. I don't think I've mentioned one of the goals that I have. If the Patreon gets to 75 patrons, I'm going to take the original incarnation of Iron Edda, which is War of Metal and Bone, which is a more traditional fantasy, bone-bonded, actual giant skeletons fighting against dwarven mecha in a very Norse-themed kind of setting. I'm going to take that and I'm going to update it so it will be a brand new system. I'm going to use the Edic Engine, and I'm also going to make it pay what you can, because I want people to have an easy on-road to the stuff that I make. So that's all going to be coming if the Patreon gets to 75 supporters. It's at like 68 right now. That's like 7 more people. It's a pay what you can model. So you get everything that I put out for whatever you can give a month. I know that the mechanics of Patreon mean that that is cutting into the $1 pledges. You know what? That's okay. I really want people to have access to this stuff. I really want to have the opportunity to revise War of Metal and Bone and to make it pay what you can. And I would like you to be part of that. So if you would, please head over to patreon.com/theothertracy and throw some support my way. There are great things coming, and I'm really excited to share them with you. So we are recording our next session in about a week, which means there's going to be a little bit of lag time between us getting that recorded and the next episode hitting the feed. I'm going to do something next week that should fill the gap. I think that may be all the time that we need. If Jupiter needs more time, then I'm going to give her more time. But a week or two, there's going to be something else. Maybe I'll do another breakdown. I might do something even completely different. We might go a little bit fictional in our presentation here. We might get some extra stuff here up on the feed. So we'll see. I'm excited for all of it. Thank you very much for listening. I really hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did. And we will see you when we come back with the group for what will be the final set of episodes of Season 1 of Iron Edda Reforged Puppet Strings. If you enjoyed this show, you should check out some of the other shows on the One Shot Podcast Network, like One Shot. On One Shot, you can discover new RPGs through actual play. Every week, James D'Amato brings you a new episode with a rotating cast of improvisers, game designers, and other notable nerds. One Shot has featured over 100 games, exploring a wide variety of genres and tones. The stories are self-contained, so you can jump in anywhere, and it's a great way to find your new favorite game. Discover the magic of RPGs with One Shot on your favorite podcast app. And the editor ain't bad either.